Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, there's no doubt that the way we used to run our businesses is not going to work today. We all know that, but you know what? A lot of people are still struggling to figure out exactly what that means. Everyone knows that the old way of doing things has been replaced, but they're just not always sure what to do about it. So one of the things I love to do is bring you the people who have thought these things through to the nth degree and created areas of expertise for you to benefit from right here on my podcast. And today, I have someone who's done just that. His name is Tim Pearson. He is the author of the brand new book, The Old Rules of Marketing Are Dead, 6 New Rules to Reinvent Your Brand and Reignite Your Business. Tim is the president of Pearson Advisors and Partners in Atlanta, Georgia. He was president and CEO of Zyman Group, a leading international management consulting firm serving the Global 1000. He has also served as vice chair, global managing partner, marketing and communications for KPMG, the Global Big Four accounting, tax, and consulting firm. He's also been president and advisor to several other companies, helping them all to merge these new marketing rules to help their businesses be successful. Tim, welcome to Indie Business Podcast.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to join you today.
Now, Tim, tell me a little bit about why you wrote this book. I know you travel and you speak to business owners around the country and even around the world. What were you seeing in their behaviors that caused you to think, you know, I need to write a book about this so I can spread this information around, more people can get it?
Well, Donna Maria, interestingly, the book was the farthest thing from my mind and actually came about as a result of a speech that I delivered in the spring of 2009 to a group of very senior government, leisure industry, marketing, tourism executives in Southern California. And the speech was so overwhelmingly positively responded to, but the thing that surprised me most were not only did people want copies of the presentation, but more importantly, they wanted to know where they could find the book. And so
you had no choice, did you?
No, it was flattering, certainly in many levels, but a surprise because what it did was it really opened my eyes, maybe for the first time, about the need and the necessity that people had for guidance, sort of coming out of the great post-Great Recession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny, you know, I work with very small business owners, and mm-hmm. it's interesting to think about how this recession has sort of trickled to affect very small businesses, oftentimes in many of the same ways that it's affected large businesses, just obviously on a smaller scale, but a lot of issues are the same, and I think your book points that out, at least from a marketing perspective.
Well, I think it does, too, and actually that's a very perceptive comment. One of the great challenges in writing the book was to write it in a way that you could take learnings from the Global 1000 or the Fortune 1000, but apply those learnings not only to large companies but to mid-sized and small companies as well. And the reality is that you can do that. So, but it was. It was at times somewhat difficult to try to understand very complex issues and make them understandable and meaningful, and actually ultimately guided the book in a direction where each chapter actually ends with some very specific questions that a small business owner or somebody in a large company should ask themselves before sort of they move on to other matters.
And that's one of the things I like most about the book too, Tim, is that you sort of challenge us not to just read and understand and enjoy the reading and learning process, but also to apply it to our businesses. And your book says that there are 6 new rules. Now, you distill multiple hundreds of principles down into six rules, because this book is really not just six rules. It's sort of a holistic way of looking at marketing a business in this new reality, which is really not just the recession, but also the technology, which is a huge part of why things are so different now.
Right. The two trends that serve as the platform, if you will, for the book were: what was the economic impact coming out of the post-Great Recession? And equally important, and actually maybe more important, were the technology changes that have taken place over the last 15 years and how those two factors have changed the way that products and services are bought and sold by consumers and, in fact, sold by companies or enterprises. And just... I'll tell you a quick story because I think it's particularly enlightening given your audience. I had a conversation literally just this morning with a small a businessman who owns a car detailing company, and he was struggling with what were the steps and the actions that he should take, because he had concluded after several years of sort of intuitively that being listed in the yellow pages as he had been for many years was no longer really the appropriate channel as one of the primary channels for him to market his business, and that he was the challenge for him was to try to ascertain where his buyers were coming from, and equally important, those channels predominantly via the internet, which were now the most effective for him relative to building his business. So, again, just a quick story literally from a couple hours ago, but the challenges that small businesses face today.
Well, and I hope that he buys your book, because there's a lot of information in here that can help him. So let's talk, Tim, about these rules that you have here. And then we can only really scratch the very surface. I highly encourage everyone to check this book out so you can dive into the details and apply them to your own business. But rule number one, Tim, you say, is that the core is everything. And what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, in its simplest, I guess what I'm suggesting is that you really have to focus on the things that really matter, and understand that any business, regardless of how large or how small, or any product, and regardless of the magnitude of its sales, ultimately has what is characterized as a brand essence. What is the differentiator or the distinctiveness or the intangible element or the emotional connection that a product or a service has with a consumer? And so the first five principles that sort of sit underneath that rule are all related to how one ascertains those things, because that in serves ultimately as the platform for, the subsequent rules. And time and time, what you see is one of two things happen. A company or an enterprise who doesn't understand what their core essence is. So as an example, the core essence, let's say, of Levi's is all American classic, fashion. Well, what you see time and time again is a company who doesn't understand that, one, or secondly, who actually moves, unconsciously away from their core essence, and then surprisingly finds that their new businesses or their innovations are being less successful, and it's because they've moved away from their core.
That is such an important point, particularly today, Tim, where it's so easy to be distracted, right? Because as you talk about getting to know what your core is, on one hand, technology makes it easier for you to do that. On the other hand, it makes it easier for you to be distracted by every little thing and go off in all these different directions and tear down that core, right? You have to discipline yourself to find this core essence and really bring it home for your customers, right?
It is a problem, and again, one that I cannot tell you how often I see, literally time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and me too, and I've been guilty, I have to say, because thank goodness I have great guests on my show like you to kind of keep me in line, but it's hard, particularly when you enjoy the technology, when you're like a techno geek, which I have sort of become, in a mild sense. I enjoy learning new things. I enjoy the fact that the technology makes it easy for me to connect with my customers. But your focus in this first rule is to make sure that whether you have that kind of personality or not, you know that core essence and you stay true to it.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, you stay true to it. You know what it is, what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
The necessity of listening to your customers, really understanding and listening to the insights that they give you about why they buy.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, using your example of technology, the other thing that's particularly problematic today is that technology can provide almost an immediate channel for bad experiences. And so the necessity for classically be termed as brand management,
mm-hmm.
but the necessity to manage your brand and its, you know, any risk to its reputation, quite honestly, is all important.
Very good. And so I guess that can also bring home the point that when we have these technologies like Yelp and Facebook and other places where people can, they don't have to call customer service, they don't have to send a formal letter anyplace to complain about a problem. In 3 seconds, they can tell 500 of their friends that they were mistreated by you or your product didn't work.
Absolutely. I mean, one bad experience can literally take a life of its own. All you need to do is look, and again, these are sort of large company examples, but I think ones that examples that your listeners would immediately sort of identify with. I mean, the many mistakes that British Petroleum BP made, the well explosion, the issues that Comcast has suffered time and time again relative to customer service. One bad experience historically, 50 mm-hmm. years ago, was fundamentally limited to, you know, a company and the individual. At best, that individual may be told 3 or 4 friends. Well, technology's platform and the various channels today allow that one person to not tell, you know, 2 or 20 or 500. They can literally share that experience with thousands of people almost immediately.
And the good news, too, Tim, is that if you are involved in the conversation, as you said earlier, if you have made it your business to be a good listener, you can turn any sort of potentially negative comment into a positive simply by showing up and offering, an apology or whatever is appropriate in the forum where everyone can see that happen, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and
that can be a part of how you actually define your brand, because I can't tell you how many times I've said, well, yeah, such and such a company, you know, they screwed up or, you know, the button fell off the dress immediately as soon as I put it on. But when I took it back, they gave me a brand new one and didn't give me a hard time. Suddenly they're a hero, right?
What happens is that you take what starts as a mistake
mm-hmm.
and if handled properly, ultimately creates what would be characterized as a brand ambassador, somebody who will not only say good things, well, someone who will not only continue to buy your service, but somebody who will go out of their way to share the positive experience that they've had with others.
And this conversation sort of leads right in, I think, to rule number 2, which
mm-hmm.
is you have nothing without the foundation. So as a part of this sort of listening, as a part of being involved in those conversations and appreciating your customer, you are, in fact, laying and building upon a foundation for your business, right?
That's exactly right. And sort of, again, not at the risk of making this a technical conversation, but things like brand architecture and graphic identity and brand attributes and brand personality, all of those things ultimately, when done properly, are the things of which your brand foundation is built. And the book spends a lot of time and a lot of detail trying to make all of those concepts and principles very easy to understand, meaningful to a small business owner or manager, so that they can apply those things to their own business.
And one of the things you talk about in here, too, that I think is so important is you talk about minding your P's. You talk about penetration. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, the three P's are comprised of penetration, price, value, and preference. So we'll sort of maybe just take a moment and go through each of those. Penetration is simply either the frequency, so depth, or breadth of how your product or service is bought by your target audience. Your target audience may be a geographic audience. It may be a demographic. It may be a combination of those things. But ultimately, your marketing should focus your sales efforts and your marketing efforts on those people that are most likely to buy. And so the strategy is, how do you penetrate? The second then is, what is the relation of the price that you sell that product for relative to its perceived value? And the book spends a lot of times in terms of how you can create incremental value, which allows you to hold the price point versus generally in many categories. What we see happening now is that price is used as the reason for purchase, and ultimately once you sort of start that path, you're on your path of your product or service becoming a commodity. And then the third P is simply preference. What are the things that you do that ultimately create a preference from a buyer or a consumer of your product over alternatives? And so, you know, focus on those things, and to the degree that you're successful, your business will grow as a result.
And, you know, let's talk for a second about that brand versus commodity, because in today's economy, it is so tempting, is it not, Tim, for businesses, and in particular small businesses, to think that the most effective way to compete is say, well, I just have to lower my prices.
Unfortunately, again, it's one of those things that you see time and time again. But there are ways to do things that do create preference and favorability and ultimately value. So, again, let me just – I'll share just a quick story from this morning. I had to deal with a small business in the Northeast where – that business had been acquired about 3 years ago, and it was some patio furniture that had been damaged by a tornado in Atlanta. So the price point of the product in this case was $2,000. And so the choice I had, since this was something that was going to be covered by insurance, was did I replace these items with identical items? Or at this particular moment in time, did I make a decision to purchase an alternative? Well, ultimately, it was the friendliness, if you will, helpfulness of the young woman that I was dealing with telephonically. So my only relationship with her was, you know, voice to voice over a telephone. And her ability to identify some replacement pieces for some other things that they sold that probably have a value of maybe $1.50.
Wow.
So the value that this company provided to me as a buyer of their products, her ability to help me on something that was worth $1.50, differentiated them sufficiently for me to make a $2,000 purchase.
Wow. And see, that is so – I'm so glad that you said that, because Here's the hard part. The hard part is that, okay, if I'm that company and I'm a small business, mm-hmm. it takes me extra effort to give you that kind of personalized service. Not that the mm-hmm. alternative would be rudeness, but it just takes an extra effort, maybe an extra 5 or 6 minutes of my time to do that, and I don't know if it's going to pay off in you paying for the higher price. And so not making excuses, I'm just saying that this is the dilemma that so many small businesses face, and what you're saying is you have to get past that.
You do, and you have to come to not only understand but come to believe that, and again, this is just one example of customer service relative to the creation of value, perceived value, but it is those types of activities that ultimately differentiate one brand from another. So if we were to go sort of above a small business, another example that is often cited is Nordstrom's customer service. Their individual departmental buyers' willingness to help you, regardless of the department that they are in, with other departments. And time again, that is what has differentiated the Nordstrom brand from others.
That's true. You never get, I don't work in that department.
That's correct. Or a manager who says, I'm almost about ready to finish my shift. I don't know if that's what they call it, but my shift. If you can give me 5 minutes, I will go from, you know, men's furnishings to women's jewelry to help you with your purchase.
Right. So, and over time, you develop that over time. This is an investment of time.
It becomes something that ultimately is embedded in the culture of the and the brand and becomes part of the core essence.
Excellent. Excellent points there. Now, point number three is, mm-hmm. many choices, but only one customer. That sounds like something that small businesses can really, really appreciate. Tell us about that.
Well, we sort of have touched on it a little bit. And what this rule is really intended to capture is, today, more than any other time in history, your ability to receive messages about a brand, about a product or a service, and the variety of channels of which those messages can be delivered, ultimately, so much of the time, for marketing people or owners of small businesses, what they lose sight of is that ultimately they're dealing with an individual. Mm. So I'll just give you some recent data that I saw last week, which I found staggering. It'll be interesting to see if your audience does. I'll ask it as a question. What do you think the percentage of U.S. companies are today that don't use data that they have, that they collect for their customers for personalization of emails?
Now, that is one hot question, and I should know the answer because I read your Twitter stream and I saw it there, but I do remember that question. Tell us.
81%.
There's no excuse for that, is there?
No, there isn't. I mean, that is what I would characterize as lazy marketing at its worst. It's marketing that doesn't look at marketing as an investment to drive profitable sales. It's a someone who looks at marketing as an expense. And so the necessity to look at your messaging, your executions, your offers, your incentives across all the, you know, traditional channels, advertising, direct mail, email, social networks, the necessity of looking at that as a return on investment and individualizing.
Yes.
To the degree now that technology can do that, individualizing your message.
Right, using people's names. I was talking to a president of a nonprofit just the other day. They have about 6,000 people at their Facebook page, and they don't have a single email address in their database.
Yeah.
And because the over-reliance on Facebook, I think, is part of that. But that's such a good point, remembering that you're actually dealing with individual people. And rule number four is, do the right things for the right reasons.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things, and I've seen it more so in the, probably the last 3 or 4 years at any point of my career, is I see people as marketers. So that can be a small businessman, it can be a marketing director, it can be a chief marketing officer, it can be a CEO. Make decisions to do something for the wrong reason.
Mm.
So let's just use the example you just shared with me. Let's get our company on Facebook.
Right.
Well, mm-hmm. For what purpose?
What for?
To what end?
Right.
Absolutely. To, you know, and what's the return on investment? And mm-hmm. unfortunately, the large swath, if you will, of sort of social networks, and I don't want to pick on social networks unnecessarily, but that's mm-hmm. where the mm-hmm. disproportionate percentage of new spending is going.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it is being directed by people for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
They're doing it because they want to say they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
not because it necessarily makes business or financial sense.
Right. And certainly once you have a Facebook page, if you don't keep it up, you might as well not even have one. And I've even hoped that some people would just delete theirs because it just makes them look bad when their last update was 6 months ago.
Right. And so we'll call it the virtuous cycle. Mm. Go back to where we started our conversation. What's the impact to your brand
mm-hmm.
or your product when you see that type of negligence? What's the consumer or prospect to think?
Right. And you know, it goes back to one of the points you made earlier, which is you're creating this foundation, this brand perception over time. So you may not notice right away that what's growing is the perception that you're not on top of where your customers are. That
right.
happens over time. So it happens over time that you create a good foundation, and it happens over time that you create a bad one. You may not notice until it's actually so damaged that it's almost irreparable.
That's correct. And the necessity throughout that entire transition for metrics and business analytics and all other forms of measurement, and these don't have to be really complicated,
mm-hmm.
you know, expensive forms of measurement, but what is the return on your marketing investment?
Right. Good points. It's unbelievable to me that we're almost out of time. So, again, I have to emphasize to everyone, we've only been able to cover the high-level overview of the first four rules. The other two I'll just share are infrastructure is more than just pipes, and lead and others will follow. But before we go, Tim, I want to ask you this. You say technology is only the enabler. Tell us in just a few minutes what you mean by that.
Okay. Sort of what we were just talking about. Technology is seen as the savior, and the interest is in the technology, not necessarily the pure exploitation of the technology for the building of profitable sales or revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And people get lost in that time and time and time again.
Okay. Because we can all learn what buttons to push, but we have to knowing why we're pushing them is where the hard work comes in.
Absolutely.
Good points. I love this. This is a wonderful book by Tim Pearson. I highly recommend it, you guys. Tim has worked for a lot of very large companies around the world, but I got to tell you that this is one of the best books I've seen that distills that experience and insight into terms that we as small business owners can understand and apply. So I encourage you to get The Old Rules of Marketing Are Dead, 6 New Rules to Reinvent Your Brand and Reignite Your Business, by Timothy R. Pearson. And, Tim, where can we go to find you online?
Well, you can go a couple places. You can go to PearsonAdvisorsAndPartners.com. That is my website where the book is featured. It's got some videos of me doing some speeches and some of the types of consulting I do. Or you could go to caaspeakers.com/Tim-Pearson. CAA Creative Artist Agency is my agent for speaking engagements.
Great.
And I also am on Twitter. And
that's right.
I am listed under Tim, T-I-M-R-P. And people
Great.
Should be able to find me that way.
Thank you, Tim. So wonderful to have you on the show. Fantastic. Follow Tim, guys, on Twitter at Tim IRP. I'll see you next week right here on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.